The month-long war between Israel and the Palestinian group Hamas has simmered to a series of ceasefires while negotiators attempt talks in Cairo, Egypt. For much of last week, Gaza was quiet under a 72-hour truce. Then rocket fire from the Gaza Strip and airstrikes from Israel started up again as talks faltered. Now the region is halfway through another 72-hour ceasefire. NPR's Alice Fordham is in Gaza. And Alice, what has it been like there since, bombs have gone quiet?
Well, it's actually my first time here, and it's confounded my expectations in some ways. The death and the destruction have been so widespread. Israel says it doesn't target civilians, but the UN, which works extensively here, reckon that of nearly 2,000 people who've died, most have actually been civilians, and tens of thousands of people are now homeless. So, how do you deal with that? And it turns out the answer is quickly. As soon as a ceasefire takes hold here, everyone who's had iron shutters on their shop opens them up. Traffic starts filling the streets, cars and kind of donkey carts and things as well. I've seen guys in cherry pickers mending electricity wires, other people patching up holes in their walls, boats head out to the sea and go fishing, kids are running around everywhere. It's like the lights just switch back on like that.
Well, meanwhile, the ceasefire is supposed to enable the negotiations, the talks. Do we know how they're going?
I wish I did know. They've already been going on for quite some time now. Politically, it's interesting in a gruesome sort of way, and maybe it helps to understand that because so many people died here, because such big sacrifices were made, it would be really hard for Hamas to come back to Gaza without some concessions made that would address some of the grievances here. People want more freedom for goods and people to move in and out of Gaza, both from Israel and from Egypt, which has really cracked down in the last year. Gazans want an airport and they want a seaport. They want extended fishing rights, and Israel wants demilitarization in exchange and for Hamas to accept some compromises in terms of who controls the border crossing. So they're indirect talks. A Hamas official has said today that they're very difficult, that they collapsed over the weekend, but both sides are now back there. The Egyptians are mediating and talks are ongoing.
Well, and you mentioned seaport. The seaport was first promised in the Oslo Accords in 1993, but of course, Israel feels that weapons would come in through a seaport. But meanwhile, you mentioned fishing rights, and that's interesting, and people getting in their boats and going out fishing. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, the issues are very much bound up together. It helps if I can describe to you what I'm seeing out of my window. So the hotel I'm staying in is right on the beach. The Gaza Strip, as you know, is a strip of coastline that runs along the Mediterranean. And I'm looking at the sea right now, and there's little kids playing on the beach. And every day, fishermen go out in little boats and catch fish. That's what I see if I look in the foreground. But if I squint and look way further out, I can see big Israeli naval vessels in the background. And as things currently stand, if a fishing boat goes more than 3 nautical miles out, those big Israeli boats fire at them, warning shots. And before the ceasefire, the boats also were firing at the strip itself. They woke me up shooting at what I believe was the Fishermen's Union building the other night. And this zone gets bigger and smaller depending on the situation. Israel says this is necessary to stop Hamas receiving weapons by sea, as you say, similar to the idea behind not having a seaport here. But the fishermen say that it impacts enormously on their livelihoods, and so an extension of this zone is one demand of the Palestinian delegation in Cairo.
We're talking to NPR's Alice Fordham in Gaza. But Alice, we're also struck by the fact that you were also reporting in Iraq, and if we could just ask you to reflect on that, because we understand that there's a huge dam, the Mosul Dam, and the insurgents from ISIS or the Islamic State have now taken it over. And you visited that dam. Tell us more the importance of holding on to that.
Yeah, well, there's lots of reasons. That particular part of northwestern Iraq, which is where we're now seeing this American intervention, both with aid and with airstrikes taking place, there's lots of reasons why it's so important. When I was last up there, we traveled up with the Iraqi Kurdish soldiers, which are known as the Peshmerga, to go and see the Mosul Dam that they are guarding. Now, in a place as dry as Iraq, you can imagine that the rivers, that the water infrastructure are extremely important. But in the wrong hands, it can be used as a weapon, or rather more specifically, the threat of its misuse can be used as a weapon. So what would happen is if people took it over, and now that is what's happened, you know, it's fallen into the hands of the militants known as the Islamic State, who know how to use it, which we have reason to believe that they do, then they can take control of the dam, and they can use it to flood an enormous area, which would cause, you know, devastation and a huge amount of deaths and a fracturing of infrastructure that's really important for the way that Iraq runs. And that's one of the reasons that it's been seen as so important to move into that area to take it back. I know that from a lot of people who operate up there, official and non-official organizations, the taking of the Mosul dam was an absolutely, you know, kind of worst case scenario, and they can't quite believe that it's happened.
That's NPR's Alice Fordham. She is in Gaza, but has been reporting from, as we hear, other danger zones as well, including Iraq. Alice, thanks so much for speaking to us.
You're welcome.
Okay. And of course, the conversation in this country is of the shocking death of Robin Williams.